Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and it is a great pleasure to have you joining us for another week. Here we are, about 3 weeks in advance of the draft, and a lot of good content to bring you. Going to talk some draft. We're going to talk a little bit way we hear it with Hub Arkish. We'll bring him in first, actually, and kind of hear what's going on, the latest news, scoops, and rumors around the league. After that, we'll bring in Greg Gabriel. Of course, you guys know Greg, our Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide author, also a longtime NFL scout and college scouting director. We are going to see what's shaking with him. As I mentioned, we're about 3 weeks out from the draft, and they say hot stove in baseball, but the hot stove football discussion is definitely heating up too. I know Greg has some thoughts on this running back crop, how the first round quarterbacks may come off the board, and we'll get into some other topics as well. So looking forward to bringing that all to you. But first, we're going to bring in Hub Arkish, our fearless leader, actually on assignment right now. So he is joining us on the cell phone, I believe from a publisher's conference in Pennsylvania. Do I have that right, Hub? Where are we chatting with you from?
I am in Hershey, Pennsylvania at the American East Newspaper Convention. And we are out finding new partners for our Pro Football Weekly insert during football season.
Very cool. And how is the search for new partners going? I hope well.
Yep, so far so good. A lot of people interested in what Pro Football Weekly does, what the NFL is doing. Obviously an exciting time as we get closer to the draft and wrap up free agency. So, hey, Hershey, Pennsylvania. I mean, if I never see another Hershey bar, it'll be okay with me unless they want to buy an ad.
I think I might need to take a ride, take a flight out to Hershey, Pennsylvania, because anything I can do to keep me away from Hershey's or any other kind of chocolate would definitely be beneficial. So that is not an idea I had thought of, but it's become kind of desperate times. So maybe that's what I'll have to think about at some point. Hub, I know the listeners aren't interested in hearing about my chocolate addiction or your trip out to recruit new partners. What they do want to hear about is what's going on around the NFL. You had a lot of good content up on our site at ProFootballWeekly.com yesterday. And I wanted to discuss it a little bit. Three different way we hear it items. The first one that I wanted to ask you about was on Roger Goodell and how his recent silence has been quite noticeable over the past couple weeks, even as some of his the NFL owners are speaking out, to be sure. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're hearing with Roger Goodell and maybe how his grip might be loosening a little bit on his power in the NFL?
You know, obviously, this goes back over the last year or two as the seeming iron-fisted ruler of the National Football League who could do no wrong started finding one mess after another to step in. And, during this past football season, it seemed like things toned down a little bit other than the ongoing cloud of Deflategate. Everybody hoped that was over until the NFL insisted on having its appeal heard. And two of the judges on the three-judge panel at the Second Circuit in Manhattan seemed to be questioning in favor of the owners. And so a lot of folks wondered, gee, is this the chance for Roger to step back up and say, I was right? We don't know. That court has not ruled yet. But in the meantime, we go to the NFL owners meetings a couple weeks ago. It is obvious to anybody with decent sources amongst the owners that Goodell was not thrilled about the way the whole Rams to Los Angeles thing came down. He's not disappointed that the Rams are there. He's been trying to get a team in Los Angeles since he took the job in 06, or 08, I apologize. But at the end of the day, it wasn't his way. It was Stan Kroenke's way. It was several owners who kind of bullied the other owners into making it happen. And that's not the way things normally get done. Then we go into the owners' meetings with Goodell and Don Mara, the Giants, saying the single biggest issue facing the NFL is traumatic brain injuries and CTE. And we come out of the owners' meetings, and Jerry Jones and Jim Irsay and other owners and coaches, Bruce Arians, are saying, hey, we don't even know if it's a problem. So according to pretty good sources close to the commissioner's office, he's very frustrated right now, and he's looking for a way to pretty much reconsolidate the authority in the commissioner's office. Roger Goodell is not a bad guy. It's not about his ego. It's not about, a me-first type situation. It's about what he views as the commissioner's role in his regime and the fact that that kind of authority has slipped away a little bit. And it's not real clear right now what kind of consensus among the more powerful owners he has to allow him to reestablish that grip.
So just taking a step back quickly, what's the timeline on the second circuit court ruling on the Tom Brady suspension? Do you have any idea? Have we kind of been left in the dark on that? And how much is that the next domino to fall to where we will then see maybe if Goodell is able to kind of wrestle back some of that control you're talking about?
Well, the appellate courts certainly move at their own pace. They're not going to be rushed or slowed down by anybody. The initial projection after the case was heard the first week in March was that it would most likely be sometime in June, you know, we might get a ruling. Now, that said, depending on where the three-judge panel is at, it could come sooner, it could come later. Those who were present in the court seemed to feel that two of the three judges leaned towards the league or Goodell, and the other judge leaned towards Brady, but that really doesn't mean anything. That was just based on the questions that were being asked. So if anyone's best guess right now, the legal experts say probably June is what we're looking at for the court's ruling.
We're chatting with Hub Arkish, the executive editor of Pro Football Weekly. You can find him on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. And Hub had a bunch of good Way We Hear It items we are discussing. One on Roger Goodell. And before I kind of turn the page on this, I guess it'll be a pretty good segue. Let's get into your next piece on the Patriots offseason and how many league observers find that they're winning the offseason. Now, we know that that's kind of a dangerous way of putting things, but from what you're hearing, Hub, Bill Belichick up to his old tricks again with the way he is kind of laying in the weeds and then in the past couple weeks has really had a couple firework acquisitions.
Yeah, it's interesting. If we're doing our jobs, we have decent sources in a lot of different places. And so what happens is you end up with a lot of members of the media working the same sources. And we put up our story about the Patriots, I believe it was last night, and all of a sudden this morning I'm reading a not too dissimilar report. I think it was on Yahoo, and then another one, I think, with Ian Rapoport, the NFL Network, coming kind of the same subject in a different way. But at the end of the day, the sway that Bill Belichick has over coaches and GMs around the NFL is just unbelievable. Everybody tends to assume, and Belichick doesn't always get it right. I mean, they've had some bad draft picks, they've had some free agency mistakes, but they get so much right that many teams tend to assume if the Patriots are doing it, we have to look at it too. And when you look at trading Chandler Jones, who was their best pass rusher, but getting the former number 10, Jonathan Cooper, was either the 7th or 10th overall pick in the first round, and a second-round pick for Chandler Jones, and then you turn around and you bring in both Chris Long and Terrence Knighton, as good a young pass rusher as Chandler Jones was, the Patriots' defensive front is better now than it was before the trade, and they've got Chris Long and Knighton, Pot Roast, on one-year prove-it deal, at a lesser cost. So it makes tremendous sense. You look at the Hogan kid from Buffalo. A lot of people think he's got the next Wes Welker, different body type, much bigger, stronger kid, but could be a perfect fit. Nate Washington is a guy who's had decent years in the NFL, never played with a quarterback like Tom Brady. So, everybody just loves what they're doing, the way that they do it. They really have lost nothing but Chandler Jones. Well, Derek Blunt still sits out there unsigned. They'll probably bring him back in their own good time. And then you got the Marty Bennett trade. They are now a threat to do what they were doing 4 or 5 years ago with Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. And Marty Bennett may have been the only tight end in the league available who could put that package together for him. So, winning the offseason rarely results in winning the regular season. But it looks like the Patriots have just had a great offseason so far in terms of free agency trades, the moves that they've made.
Hub, we've had the pleasure of being in the Bears locker room the past couple years. I know you know Martellus Bennett well and have had a really good relationship for the most part with him. I can't help but wonder, though, how Marty sort of jives with the Patriot way. I know there will never be a dull moment between, interviewing Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett. Obviously, that's going to be the most colorful, if not the most dominant tight end pairing in the league. Do you think that Martellus is going to be able to show the restraint necessary to exist in that locker room and not ruffle any feathers?
I think it's a great question because while common sense suggests the answer has to be yes, the reality is we've always seen, and I love Marty Bennett. He's as different as any NFL player I've ever met. He's an extremely bright young man. I do suspect that there may be a little attention deficit disorder or something else going on there because as bright as we know he is, he can do some things that are less than wise on occasion. But I've never seen him out of control in the locker room off the field. Now, that said, we have been on the practice field with the Bears a few times, and we have seen him lose control on the field. So, and that, quite frankly, is where some of his issues came with this coaching staff and this regime. It will be worth watching. You know, it's interesting because I'm also the rare media guy who has a pretty good relationship with Bill Belichick, and yet at the owners' meetings during the coaches' breakfast on Wednesday morning, I guess the AFC coaches were Tuesday morning, I tried to ask Bill in the media gangbang with all the other writers around, you know, if it is a challenge at all to get a personality like Marty Bennett, how he would handle it. And I got a very Belichickian cold stare and said, I'll coach him like I coach everybody else. So the message clearly has been given to Marty Bennett. You better keep your head on straight. He knows he's not getting a new contract from them with 1 year left on the deal. In essence, it's like everything else the Patriots do. They gave up a fourth-round pick, but they've got Marty Bennett, a former Pro Bowl tight end, on a one-year prove-it deal. And if Bennett wants one more big payday, he's going to have to keep his head on straight. And I think he's smart enough and under control enough to get that done.
And a great point there at the end. Of course, Martellus Bennett's still just 29 and entering a contract year. So he should have every incentive necessary beyond joining, you know, the perennial Super Bowl contender of this generation. There's a lot of financial incentive for Martellus to fall in line and have a career year. We'll see if that does, in fact, happen. And just to quickly remind listeners, Bill Belichick, many thought, was actually engaging in a silent protest down at the owners' meeting. So regardless of how good Hub's relationship might be with Belichick, if he was able to get any answer on Martellus there, that would have been something. So just a couple more quick ones regarding New England. You mentioned Jonathan Cooper, former, I believe, seventh overall pick. Really, as much as the Cooper acquisition, it was the second-round pick that the Patriots got in exchange for Chandler Jones, but certainly fortuitous that New England's longtime offensive line coach is also now coming back after a few years sabbatical, I believe. Do you think that the best is yet to come from Jonathan Cooper, and how much do you think he can help the O-line, which, of course, we saw was the area New England was badly exposed in their playoff exit?
Well, what's interesting is the reason that they were exposed in the playoffs is that their starting left tackle, Nate Solder, had gone down for the year in midseason. Sebastian Vollmer, the right tackle, had moved to the left side. He got banged up late in the season. And yet, with them both back healthy, they're in pretty good shape at tackle. It was the interior of the line ever since they dealt Logan Mankins that has been struggling a little bit. Cooper is a perfect fit. He never quite lived up to his potential in Arizona at the seventh overall pick in the draft, but he wasn't bad either. And so this is a classic example of the kind of guy that the Patriot way eventually gets him to where they want him to be. If he just plays up to what he was doing in Arizona, it's an upgrade to the Patriots. If he becomes the player that almost every scout you talked to 5 years ago thought he could be coming out of school in Carolina, yes, he could be special. And it's a great move for the Patriots.
Remember, listeners, it was Jonathan Cooper and Chance Warmack both going in the top 10 picks of the, I believe, 2013 draft. Some think that's maybe when the pendulum started to shift to spending those type of premium picks on guards. It hasn't worked out great for Warmack either, but obviously both of these kids, just 26 years old, I think, so you know, the jury remains out on them. I mentioned there was a segue when I went from Goodell to the Patriots discussion. At the end of your Way We Hear It item, Hub, you had a line about you know, how the Tom Brady potential suspension still kind of hovering over the Patriots, and how one scout said to you, presumably a bit tongue-in-cheek, that maybe Bill Belichick wouldn't mind if Jimmy Garoppolo got a four-week audition to start the season if Brady's suspension was somehow still upheld. What do you hear on that? I assume it was more a joke, but you kind of ended a little cryptically wondering if maybe Goodell would still put his put the hammer down on Brady. What do you think becomes of all this? Where does all this end up?
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see. Roger Goodell has insisted that the reason the league is appealing this has nothing to do with Deflategate or Tom Brady personally. It's that they have to establish the authority given to them in the collective bargaining agreement that allows them to issue this kind of suspension. There is some truth in that. I don't think anybody at this point doubts or denies that this was a vendetta from Goodell against the Patriots, not because of anything personal he might feel towards them so much as he was already losing his grip and might have been trying to use this to send a message to the rest of the owners. Whatever the reasoning was, they can't very well go to court, file an appeal. They've got millions of dollars of the league's revenues and legal fees on this now. If they win, he's not likely to reduce the suspension, so they've got to enforce it at that point. And, you know, I think what people wonder, there's only one question left about Bill Belichick. He's never done any of this without Tom Brady.
Right.
He's the longest tenured coach in the NFL. Most coaches don't want to hang around after 9-10 years. He's working on 17 years. Is he thinking about going for a Chuck Knoll-type regime of 20-plus years? If so, he's got to have another quarterback. They love Garoppolo when they use the number two pick on him. And so, no, I think this scout was actually saying that he thinks that Belichick would like to see it. You put Garoppolo out there, you look at the schedule in the East, play four games. Even if you went 1-3, Brady can come back and get you to 10-6. So it may very well be. I don't think it's the first choice. Obviously, he doesn't want to see Brady punished, since it seems pretty obvious that he really didn't do anything wrong. But it wouldn't be the end of the world, I guess, was the point. It would almost be a hidden bonus if they got a look at Garoppolo and he turned out to be the heir apparent.
Fascinating stuff with Hub Arkish. Just spending a couple more minutes here with the executive editor of ProFootballWeekly.com. I want to move on to his One More Way We Hear It piece, and I hope you'll still check them out on our website, www.ProFootballWeekly.com. Hub, if the Patriots are the model of stability in the NFL, on the other end of the spectrum right now is the San Francisco 49ers, as dysfunctional as any franchise in the league. You're hearing that it starts all the way at the top, and that while Trent Baalke gets a lot of the flack, that maybe a little bit more of it needs to go to Jed York. What are you hearing with the way that things have devolved here, and how do the 49ers go about getting this back on track if they can?
Well, it's kind of an interesting situation. Listen, there's no question that Trent Baalke and Jim Harbaugh was not a marriage made in heaven, but boy, it was a marriage that produced some great results for those couple of years that they were going to three straight NFC title games. They got to a Super Bowl. They were making Colin Kaepernick look like the next big thing at quarterback. And then once it finally came apart, Kaepernick started to come apart. Players started leaving left and right, and they now have the mess that they have on their hands. Definitely go to ProFootballWeekly.com, because when you read the list of talent that has left there in just the last 18 months, it's almost stunning. And yet, you know, in the case of Harbaugh, and as you know, Jim and I have been friends for a long time, I can tell you that it was as much or more his relationship with Jed York as it was his relationship with Trent Baalke that caused him to believe it was time to get out of San Francisco. The Jim Tom Sula hire absolutely had Jed York's fingerprints on it as much as Trent Baalke's, and that was obviously an embarrassing disaster. So you also look at Baalke's recent drafts, just not as good as he was doing in the draft during the early years of the Harbaugh regime. At the end of the day, what you have is a franchise that apparently seems determined to deal Colin Kaepernick for what's now looking like it could be a third or fourth round pick, with no answer at the quarterback position. And so when you look at the decisions being made with this organization, it's just really hard to get your arms around where they're going. But the bottom line is that no team has fallen further faster. It's just four seasons ago that Trent Baalke was the NFL Executive of the Year. Jim Harbaugh was the NFL Coach of the Year. And they now come off a 2015 season where they are one of the worst teams in the NFL, with a coach who was a bit of an embarrassment, and now hiring a retread in Chip Kelly, who was pretty much drummed out of Philadelphia.
Yeah, and not just a retread, but one of the bigger egos, I think, in the NFL, that's fair to say. How will that mesh in San Francisco with Trent Baalke, also a sizable ego, Jed York, you just alluded to? Can you imagine that working, or is this look like it's destined to fail? What do you see in terms of the dynamics there between the three of those guys? And will Chip Kelly have enough freedom to go out and get his quarterback? Because we have to assume Blaine Gabbert isn't that guy if Kaepernick's not around.
You know, the one thing that I'm hearing from a number of sources out there is that Chip Kelly is no dummy, and he learned a lesson in Philadelphia, which many people have learned the hard way, which is that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so I do believe that he has gone to San Francisco content to let Trent Baalke build the roster, for him to tell him the kind of players he wants, and then for him to coach him the best he can. We should also point out that as we speak, Colin Kaepernick is in San Francisco, has reported for the off-season conditioning programming, has now had his first meeting with Chip Kelly. I've got a very good source out there who tells me that he was told by Baalke in December that he would never want Kaepernick back on his team or in his locker room. But that said, they know they don't have a better answer. And so until he's dealt, he's not dealt. And what we don't know is Chip Kelly working to keep him? Is Chip Kelly working to move him? Or is Chip Kelly just sitting back quietly waiting to see what will happen? So it continues to be one of the more interesting stories in the league. But I think the saving grace for the 49ers at this point could be that Kelly and Kaepernick realize how good they could be for each other, that Balky swallows it on that one, even if he doesn't like Kaepernick, and maybe they do have a quarterback. Suddenly things can get fixed a lot quicker if you got a quarterback. We know what happens in the NFL if you don't, and we have pretty good confidence that Blaine Gabbert might buy you some time, but he's not the guy you're going to win championships with.
Yeah, and just super fascinating because obviously Colin Kaepernick has the mobility, has the unique athleticism that Chip Kelly gravitates towards toward at the quarterback position. So that was the initial thought, I think, for most people is, oh, wow, this can work great. And then came the rumblings that Kaepernick wasn't happy. But he'd have to be pretty unhappy to swallow whatever it's going to be, $4, $5, $6 million, because that's what the Broncos aren't willing or reportedly are not willing to take in a deal. So it's a fluid situation. We'll continue to follow it. And Hub Arkish will have a finger on the pulse of this and so much more. We are going to let you run, Hub, but we really, really do appreciate it. And we look forward to having you back in studio for the podcast next week.
Yeah, just one thing to keep in mind as we go. Colin Kaepernick is a 29-year-old kid who may be the best athlete in the NFL with under 40 starts, who's thrown 56 touchdowns and 23 interceptions in the NFL. Yeah, it looked bad there that last year, but we now know he's had three surgeries since. This is a real, real case of be careful what you wish for and what you end up with. So it'll be really interesting to see whether the 49ers finally pull the plug on that one. I'm going to go have one more Hershey bar, and then I will see you back in the office tomorrow.
All right, Hub. Sounds great. Safe travels. Thanks again for joining us.
All right. Take care.
That was Hub Arkish. Lots of good stuff, way we hear it this week, and so many interesting layers to that 49ers situation. Hub is also hearing that none of the, and it's not a big shocker, but none of these first-round quarterbacks really compare all that favorably, at least not initially, to Colin Kaepernick. So it just kind of furthers his point that there's really not a fallback plan if they are to make that move. So we'll continue to monitor. You know, I had made a joke. The 49ers have been very intriguing for the past couple years. They haven't had a lot of wins, obviously. I expect it's going to be more of the same, but with Chip Kelly and with that power struggle in the front office, I would imagine there will continue to be a ton of intrigue in San Francisco, even if there isn't a ton of wins in the immediate future. We are going to take a quick break. Coming up on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, we're going to bring in Greg Gabriel. As promised, he has got all the latest draft buzz for you in just a couple minutes. That and more when we return on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thank you for joining us. You know, I forget to do this so quickly. I just want to give a big thanks to the guys that are making this podcast possible, Spinning the Dials, John Solly and Dan Mott. They're the reason that we are coming to you so crystal clear, and they work so hard every week and rarely get the attention, the thanks that they deserve. So thank you, Dan and John. And as mentioned, we are going to bring in Greg Gabriel next and talk a little bit of draft. If you're checking out our website, profootballweekly.com, you know Greg has a new column up on first round running backs, or rather how some running backs kind of, what's the best way of putting it? How not as many running backs fit into the first round as maybe they used to. So I wanted to bring in Greg to discuss that and a couple more issues. As you know, Greg Gabriel, the author of the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide, a longtime NFL scout, was the college scouting director for the Chicago Bears. How's it going, Mr. Gabriel?
It's real good. Except I don't know who Mr. Gabriel is. He's my father. I'm Greg.
All righty. Well, we appreciate you joining us. And I want to ask you about the running back column you wrote. I want to ask you about first-round quarterbacks. But I'm dying to know, as the draft approaches and this crazy time is occurring as it does annually, do you miss your former role being in an NFL front office and being in these draft rooms? Or is this kind of a nice departure? I would assume maybe a little bit less pressure in your current role.
Well, there's less pressure, but yeah, you have to miss it because, you know, you get such a rush out of it, I guess might be the best term. You know, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of work, especially in the month of April. You know, you start meetings in the beginning of the month leading up to the draft. these, you know, it's really the first time you're sitting with your scouts and your coaches, ownership, and the, you know, and the front office decision makers as far as scouting goes, and making final decisions, putting the board together, deciding who you're going to take. You know, you have a lot of ideas going into these meetings, but you can flush out a lot of things. You get a strong indication of how the coaches feel, and the last thing you want to do is take a player that you're going to basically shove down a coach's throat, because that player will never succeed if that's the case.
Right, right. We're visiting with Greg Gabriel here, and you know, I can certainly understand him missing that role, but I can tell you we are absolutely thrilled to have him on our side, and we hope you've already went out and grabbed the draft guide. Greg's reports are excellent. His rankings appear to be spot on. We're going to talk about a few of them here. As I mentioned, you wrote a column on the Pro Football Weekly website that's up today, Tuesday, regarding the devaluation of the running back position. It's not necessarily a new topic, but you were certainly able to shed some different light on it from your experiences being in those rooms and from your conversations with current GMs. So why don't you just fill in the listeners a little bit about why you think that the running backs are fewer and far between in the first round, and especially in the top 10, where it seems like they, I think there's been, what, four in the past handful of years now?
Well, it's part of it's the way the game has changed.
Right.
And the way clubs are now utilizing backs. You know, it used to be you wanted a bell cow type back. He'd get most of the carries. He'd be a three down type guy. And that's not the case anymore. You're doing a lot of rotation with your backs, and you're trying to complement them. You know, you have a one back that does certain things very well, and then you have another back that complements him by doing things that the first back can't do as well, and that way you always have a variety, and you can fool the defenses a little bit. And on top of that, by taking away carries, you're trying to prolong the life of a running back as a whole. You know, the career length or shelf life on a running back is very, very short, and that's one of the reasons why their value in the draft has dropped a little bit. That's not to say there's not going to be a couple taken in the first round. It's where 10 years ago and even in a few times since, you know, when a guy's special, you know, you would have taken him. And I mentioned in the article in 2005, three went in the top five. I don't think you'll ever see that happen again, just because of how teams look at the running back position and the shelf life. You know, we've seen a lot of top backs that one hit and they're gone, and that could be as a rookie. It could be 2 years, 3 years into the league. Could happen in college. And with other positions, generally speaking, their longevity is a lot more than a running back.
And just a recent history lesson, the last couple guys to go in the top 10, I believe, among them, Trent Richardson, C.J. Spiller, Darren McFadden. That's a quick way to get NFL GMs fired, particularly in the case of Spiller and Richardson, of course. So last year we saw, of course, Todd Gurley, the Offensive Rookie of the Year, went number 10 to the Rams in a bold move. It sounds, Greg, like you don't see any – well, some believe that Ezekiel Elliott belongs in that conversation. I believe you see him more, and I think you said the 11 to 20 or the 11 to 15 range. Why don't you tell us, expound a little bit about Elliott and Derrick Henry, the other running back you have with a first-round grade this year?
Well, I think, you know, is it possible that he goes in the top 10? Sure, anything's possible.
Right.
But I'm also looking at, you know, the history of running backs, what's happened to them, their short lifespan. And I, as much as I like Zeke Elliott, the guy's a good back. He can, he's a good runner. He's got good vision. He's got power. He's got speed. He can break the long one. He catches the ball well. He's a willing blocker. But he's very good. He's not special. And when I say special, that's a guy like Adrian Peterson. Todd Gurley, before his injury, had a lot of special to him. And since he's come back, he has shown that he didn't lose any of that special. There's a couple guys next year that may have that special to him. But I don't think Elliott is in that, quite in that category. Now, could he go? I mean, you know, a lot of prognosticators, draft analysts, you know, have him going maybe at 4 to Dallas or at 8 to Philly, you know, somewhere along that. I just, you know, I don't think that's really sound or good drafting if you're going to use a pick that high, you know, on a running back, where now when you get into the teens, there's already been a little bit of a drop-off in the talent level of the players, and you're not as expecting as much out of the players you would, say, a top 5, top 8, top 10 pick. And I think it's just more apropos to take a guy at that time than take him that early in a draft.
Greg, maybe it's just semantics. What about just outside the top 10? I'm selfishly asking you. We're obviously stationed here in Chicago. You have such ties to the Bears, and the Bears have some ties to Ezekiel Elliott with their running backs coach, Stan Drayton, and obviously just let a legend walk in Matt Forte. Is number 11 still a little too soon? Do the Bears have too many other needs, or do you think that might be a logical connection?
Personally, I wouldn't make that move myself. Okay. I think that, you know, and you mentioned Matt Forte. We got Matt Forte in the middle of the second round.
Yeah.
And he's one of the, you know, outside of Walter Payton, he might be the second best back in the history of the Chicago Bears. And there's been a lot of backs who have been taken in the second round or later that have had great careers. And you look at John Fox. John Fox is the type of guy that likes to use a rotation. And he has a history of having excellent backs that have been taken later in the draft. And the case of Anderson at Denver, he was a guy who was a free agent.
Right.
And he just, you know, struck it big in free agency. So could it happen? Yeah, absolutely, it could happen. I don't see it happening because of the other needs. There's too many needs on the defensive side of the ball. You might want another offensive lineman. You could use more depth at the wide receiver position, and you can still grab a very good running back that can fit in with the backs that are currently here in the third, fourth round, and these guys can be quality players for the Bears.
You know, talking about some of the other running backs, and we're chatting with Greg Gabriel, the author of the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide, longtime NFL scout. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Gabe, and make sure you're checking out his updated rankings on the Pro Football Weekly website. Greg has definitely got a great feel for where these players figure to come off the board, and he is just working the phones constantly at this time of the year. Greg, you mentioned, you said C.J. Anderson, formerly undrafted. Last year, David Johnson, I believe round three, came on like gangbusters for Arizona late in the season. Do you see a back that has the potential to make that kind of an impact in the mid to later rounds if teams obviously do want to hold off on a guy like Ezekiel Elliott or Derrick Henry?
Yeah. In fact, I see a bunch that aren't going to go, you know, I think Henry's going to go in the bottom part of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But that now you got guys like Jordan Howard, only played 1 year at Indiana. He was at Alabama, Birmingham. Tough inside runners, got creativity to him. C.J. Procise from Notre Dame, you know, interesting guy. Never played the running back position until last August when he was moved there. He came to Notre Dame as a safety. Then he played receiver. Then moved to the run. Actually, they moved him to the running back position because of the open field running ability he showed against LSU in their bowl game following the 2014 season. And he's a guy, having never played the position, steps in and runs for over 1,000 yards and had some breakaway speed that few thought he had. And while he's still raw, you see the upside. You see the vision. He runs a little bit tall. He'll learn to run lower. But he's got great open field running ability. He's got a lot of power for a guy. He still has to get stronger in the upper body, but his lower body is very, very strong. He catches the ball well, has to learn how to block. He's willing. You see him step in and try to do it, just really lacks the technique. But I think he's got, you know, the type of guy who's got a bright future. Devontae Booker, another guy, you know, quality running back. A lot of these guys are really good players, put up some good numbers, showed creativity, and I think, you know, a running back's got to show inside running ability and some power and creativity inside to be able to make the jump to the NFL, and all these guys have shown that's at the college level.
So teams looking for the next mid-round producer in the David Johnson, perhaps the Devontae Freeman mold, although Freeman didn't do much as a rookie, obviously needed Tevin Coleman to get hurt to really have his opportunity last year. Sounds like there will be some guys there in the middle rounds, according to Greg Gabriel. I believe he's got a third-round grade on C.J. Procise, a fourth-rounder on Devontae Booker out of Utah. Greg, getting back to the top of the draft, there's no position that's discussed more than quarterbacks, and I know you have some feelings on how maybe the first round will shake out regarding guys presumably like Carson Wentz, obviously North Dakota State, Jared Goff. I don't know if Paxton Lynch is still in that equation, according to you. What are you hearing on how the quarterback hungry teams are going to approach these top guys in the draft?
Well, the way quarterbacks have been drafted the last 10, 12 years, they've all basically been overdrafted,
right,
except for Andrew Luck, who obviously should have been the first pick in the draft. But a lot of these guys, because of the nature of the position, nobody has one. You have to get one. And so the teams that need one make it a huge priority, and they draft them a little higher than they really should take them, but that is what it is. I think Wentz will be the first guy taken. I think he'll go to Cleveland, but the dart I'm throwing at the wall, and I'm just looking, you know, from my experience in the league and looking at the roster, I think Dallas is going to take a quarterback. Jerry Jones has gone out of his way to say they're not taking a quarterback at four. And we all know this is the lying season. And he's also bringing in six quarterbacks are coming in over the next 2 weeks to visit. So that's six out of the 30 visits, including the top three, Wentz, Goff, and Lynch. And I just think when you look at their roster, there's Romo and nobody else. And Romo hasn't been able to stay healthy in the last few years. He's getting up in age, and there's no assurance that he's going to stay healthy this year. I think they have to get a guy to groom and get him ready to play. If Romo stays healthy for a year or two, that's a great situation for the quarterback, because then it could become a situation like Aaron Rodgers had at Green Bay. I think it'd be very smart for them to do it. Whether they do it or not, you know, we won't know that till April 28th. But to me, I'm penciling that one in for a quarterback. I think Lynch and then might get picked a little bit. He's obviously going to be the next quarterback taken, and it might end up, I was figuring him as a, you know, more of a late first round type guy. I had him higher in that originally, but, you know, coming out of the combine, some people told me that he wasn't real strong when they had him on the board. And a lot of that doesn't have anything to do with his intelligence. It just has to do with the offense he played in.
Right.
What they asked him to do, and what he actually knew about drawing up plays, et cetera. They didn't have a very sophisticated offense, so there's going to be a learning curve with them. But, you know, I think if Goff ends up going to Dallas at four, or to reverse it, and Goff goes to Cleveland, and then Wentz goes to Dallas, you know, I could see Lynch going in the top 15, because the team then was really – after quarterback may trade them, you know, trade up to get that pick to make sure they get him. Because after him, there's going to be a big drop off.
And of course, it's I believe the Rams picking at 15, obviously with a huge void at the quarterback position. I know I've mocked Paxton Lynch there a couple times. That means it definitely won't happen. But let me ask you, Greg. There's a couple other teams, obviously with playoff caliber defenses right now and huge holes other than Los Angeles at the quarterback position. Obviously the Jets and the Broncos. Do you think they kind of have their guy and they're just waiting in Ryan Fitzpatrick and potentially Colin Kaepernick? Or do you think that maybe they could pull a surprise possibly in the first round of the draft? You talk about how some of these guys, quarterbacks that is, tend to be overdrafted. Is there potentially a fourth guy that could sneak in, a Connor Cook, a Dak Prescott, or is that just way too big of a reach?
You know, I, if you asked this question last September, you're going to say Connor Cook, but, mm-hmm. you know, there's been a lot of negative things said about Connor Cook. When you look at the physical traits, they're obviously there. But half of the quarterback position is the intangibles. It's the leadership. Does he inspire his teammates as far as them thinking that he can go out and win games no matter what? I think those are questions about Connor Cook that haven't been answered, and some people have even questioned his overall work habit. You know, is he a real gung-ho worker? Does he have that strong passion for the game that you need to be a top quarterback in the National Football League? I think it's possible, because of the natural traits that he has, that he could go in the first round. And, you know, it's like we saw with Teddy Bridgewater, you know, a year before that, or going into that season, you know, he looked like the odds-on favorite to be the top pick of the draft. He ended up being the last pick in the first round. You could get a situation like that with Cook, where somebody trades up into the bottom part of the first round mm-hmm. to try to get him. And the main reason you're doing that is to get that option on the fifth year of the contract.
Okay. We know it won't be Rick Spielman, though, presumably the guy that you know, has made a habit of trading back into the first round. Obviously, that's how he got Teddy Bridgewater. Only fair to mention, I think the jury is still a little bit out on Teddy Bridgewater. It'll be a big year three for him. But chatting with Greg Gabriel, only a couple minutes left here. I know we have went offense heavy this week. I am hopeful Greg is going to join us in the next couple weeks, and maybe we'll shift the attention to defense a little bit more. Just on the way out, I'm guessing it's still a little bit too early to ask you for a couple sleepers. I'll give you another week or so to figure that out, but is there one or two guys that, since our magazine went to press, have really risen or have really fallen? I know you did your updated grades, and I'm just curious if there's been a particular amount of buzz about one or two guys that has caused their stock to fluctuate.
Well, you know, there's some guys, and I don't have, unfortunately, I don't have the list right in front of me. Some guys from who weren't combine guys, mm-hmm. who had outstanding pro days, and then when you go back and you look at the tape, you go, why wasn't this guy at the combine? And one, there's a, I think his name is Holmes. He's an outside linebacker slash defensive end from Montana. And, you know, he's a guy, you know, until you saw the pro day update, you didn't hear much about him. Then you get some tape and you look at him, and the guy's a legitimate fourth, fifth round pick who's got a chance to be a pretty good player in the league. And the same with a guy I sent in the report yesterday, defensive end slash outside linebacker from Texas El Paso. Again, you look at him, you look at the traits, you look at the athleticism, his size, the way he moves around the field, and you go, you know, what was wrong with the combine scout that this guy didn't get an invite to the combine in the first place? But that happens every year. Every year we see about 30, 35 guys who didn't go to the combine who end up getting drafted, some as high as the second round, but usually they start coming off in the third.
And lastly, on the way out for you, Greg, I got one name circled here. He's a guy that's intrigued me, and there's a couple small school corners that are intriguing. But William Jackson is a kid who I think is getting a lot of buzz over the past 2 months. Can you see him now? I believe you gave him a grade that could potentially land him in the first round. Is he in the running to potentially be the fourth corner off the board? Is there any way you could see him leapfrogging Mackenzie Alexander? And just a quick scouting report on William Jackson. And then the other kid I like, DeAndre Hall from Northern Iowa. How is it evaluating these small school corners?
Well, DeAndre Hall, when you looked at the tape, the first guy that he reminded me of was Peanut Tillman.
Mm-hmm.
The long, you know, the movement skills and the long arms, but he didn't run like Peanut did. You know, he ran 4.6, and Peanut ran in the low 4.4s or mid 4.4s when we drafted him. So because of the speed, I think that's going to drop him, but his tape is excellent.
Right.
And the guy plays the ball well. He uses his body well, and he can, you know, pedal and turn, transition, do everything that you want. Just doesn't have the great speed that you'd want a corner to have. As far as the Houston kid, you know, I talk to people around the league, and they say that, you know, what he really is a press cover guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
That when you put him in some other things, you put him in off coverage, you put him in zone, he's not quite as good as he is in press. If you're going to play predominantly press-type coverage, and there are some teams that do that, those teams are going to value him better than a team that, say, does a lot of zone and a lot of off coverage. So really it depends on the team as to where he falls. On, you know, he could be the third corner on one board. He could be the fifth or sixth corner on another board. And that's not unusual. That happens a lot.
All righty, that just goes to show, obviously, fit is such a huge thing this time of the year, and the draft boards are going to vary from one team to the next quite a bit. Greg, we greatly appreciate the time. We hope to have you back on next week. But in the meantime, hope you enjoy the week. Continue grinding, and we can't wait to talk to you again soon, okay?
Okay, guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. That was Greg Gabriel, Pro Football Weekly draft guide author, longtime NFL scout, and a ton of good stuff from Greg today. I do apologize because I hope to get a little bit deeper into the defense, just into overall evaluations, but we've got a couple weeks left for that. I want to talk about these defensive tackles. That is such a deep group. Obviously, I want to get into some of this linebacker safety hybrid conversion talk that has been garnering a lot of buzz in this draft class. So we'll have Greg back, but I think that's going to about do it for today. We greatly appreciate it, as always. We hope you enjoyed. We're not going anywhere. The draft talk is just going to continue heating up, and we hope you are going to continue keeping it locked in at ProFootballWeekly.com. I am your host, Arthur Arkish. Follow me on Twitter, please, at Arthur Arkish. Make sure you're at ProFootballWeekly.com following us on Twitter as well. And we'll be back same time, same place next week. Thank you again. Have a good week, guys.